Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 13th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 28, I believe, of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll begin reading aphorism number 82, and using O'Reilly's version, this begins what has been divided into chapter 3, Taking the Case. I'd like to extend our thanks to all those professional homeopaths and interested persons who are listening to our radio show. This is enrichment to our knowledge and understanding of the application and theory of homeopathy. We're always happy to see people on the HWC live chat so that we can announce those comments over the air. And as a follow-up, we also love to continue the conversation on the Blog Talk Radio Who's Reading the Organon group on Homeopathy World Community. We're going to begin with a couple of lines of inspiration, and then Vera will be on the line to get us going with our formal discussion. So inspiration number one. You are the embodiment of the information you choose to accept and act upon. To change your circumstances, you need to change your thinking and subsequent actions. This is a quote by British-born businessman, motivational speaker, and humanitarian, Adlin Sinclair. And then the next quote is Confucius, someone from further back in history. Quote, when it is obvious that the goal cannot be reached, don't adjust the goals, adjust the action steps. I wonder if those two work together. News on the HWC. There's been a lot of talking about diet, nutrition, and supplements lately, especially Dr. Sushil Bal and Dr. Mir Zahad. They have posted a few articles. Take a look at them and let us know your opinions and the way that you provide information in those areas. And also, I shouldn't play any favorites, but I do love Vera's Debunking Myths articles. They highlight the questions that people have about homeopathy and bring them to the foreground. So I've had some fun with that, and you might want to take a look and comment. Vera is waiting for your answers to her question. Gisela DiCarlo says that homeopathy works for animals and is looking to start a clinic for terminally ill pets. I encourage people to visit the Veterinarians and Animal Lovers group. There's already 139 members. Dr. Shreya Deshpande says she is not herself and very unhappy. She continues with the big question, how does homeopathy work? Join the conversation there and see if you can lift her spirits. I am ready to go straight into it now, Vera.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that good?
That's pretty good, Debbie. Okay, we're moving from this week into the whole area of case taking. Just a brief comment before we start on something that came up during our last session. The issue of isopathy came up, and someone mentioned that isopathy was accepted by Hahnemann. This really doesn't appear to be the case, and I recommend that people read aphorism 56 and the footnote to read exactly what Hahnemann thought about isopathy. And let's move on to...
Okay. Right. I just want to clarify that I don't think that anybody said that Hahnemann accepted isopathy. I think what was said was that if it is a similimum, then it is homeopathic.
Well, if it's a similimum, then it's not isopathy. There's isopathy and there's a similimum. Isopathy means per idem, means the same. And similimum means a similar. So you can't say the same as a similar. It's either the same or it's only similar. Anyway, I recommend people read the aphorism and read for themselves. And we'll be reaching this aphorism at some stage during this year. So those who have already boned up on it will have that advantage. Anyway, we're moving into the whole issue of case-taking, which is also something that's come up on HWC recently. I asked a question whether you need a very long case-taking, whether there's a correlation between long case-taking and better results, and the answer is by no means clear. So let's see what Hahnemann has to say on the subject, shall we?
Definitely.
Okay, I'll start reading from Berica. If you see anything interesting, then let me know. And if you lose me, I'll wait to hear. Vera, where are you?
Is this aphorism number 82?
We're on aphorism number 82.
Okay, thanks.
Although by the discovery of that great source of chronic diseases, as also by the discovery of the specific homeopathic remedies for the psora, medicine has advanced some steps nearer to a knowledge of the nature of the majority of diseases it has to cure, yet, for settling the indication in each case of chronic disease he is called on to cure, the duty of a careful apprehension of its ascertainable symptoms and characteristics is as indispensable for the homeopathic physician as it was before that discovery. As no real cure of this or of other diseases can take place without a strict particular treatment, individualization, of each case of disease. Only that in this investigation some difference is to be made when the affection is an acute and rapidly developed disease, and when it is a chronic one. Seeing that in acute disease the chief symptoms strike us and become evident to the senses more quickly, and hence much less time is requisite for tracing the picture of the disease, and much fewer questions are required to be asked, as almost everything is self-evident. Then in a chronic disease which has been gradually progressing for several years, in which case the symptoms are much more difficult to be ascertained. And here Hahnemann gives us a brief footnote. Hence the following directions for investigating the symptoms are only partially applicable for acute diseases. Okay, so now we know going from the end that the coming aphorisms are only partially relevant for acute diseases. We know going backwards, since I do love to go backwards, we know that in an acute disease, I read books from the end as well. What can you do?
It means that you don't like a mystery novel. It means that you want to know the answer before you start.
No, actually, the way I operate it is, if what I read at the end of the book is something I couldn't have guessed from the beginning of the book, then the book's worth reading.
Okay.
It's a little warped, I accept. But here, if we see Hahnemann...
I'm sure a lot of people do the same thing.
I hope so. I should set up a support group. Okay, so Hahnemann is saying something that we all know as homeopaths. In an acute disease, you don't have to ask many questions. You see it. The disease is making itself known to us and screaming out its remedy more often than not, while the patient might be screaming as well. Or we might be screaming too. Who knows? In a chronic disease, we're going to need to ask more questions. But how many is the question? Now, moving backwards, Hahnemann is saying... This is just to keep people on their toes. If you're used to moving forward, sometimes you lose track because you forget the beginning by the time you get to the end. So we've said acute disease, less questions, more obvious. Chronic disease, more questions. It's been going on for a while. Moving back, we need individualization of each case of disease. Even though homeopathic remedies have been found for psora, even though Hahnemann's discovery of sore as a great source gives certain definitions to a very broad disease picture, we still need to individualize disease in each and every case, which means we have to ask more questions or listen more to the patient or watch more or observe more. I think that more or less covers that aphorism. What do you think, Debbie?
I have a silly question. I thought I heard you pronounce the P in Sora.
I pronounce the P in Sora, yeah.
Is this what we are to do?
I really don't know. It's what we do. What we do in Israel, we tend to pronounce the P in Sora, but it's very possible that it's not usually pronounced. I don't know. Although I'm an expert with the accent to match, my reading of terms and also of remedies, if anyone finds the way I read remedies strange, it's because it's coming from a foreign language.
Okay. Somebody's got to look it up. Let me see if it's written in our Yahshua. Do they show the pronunciations in there?
I think they show pronunciation.
Oh,
well,
dear.
You could say I'm very sorry if it's wrong.
Oh, my. Your humor is really filtering in today. Well, yeah, if anybody has an answer to that question, Debbie's interested to know.
Okay.
Should
we carry on to 83?
Do we need to define SORA or let people know a little bit about...
No, I don't feel this is the place. I don't feel this is the place to define SORA. I think that when we relate to miasms and chronic diseases within the organon, that's where we'll go into the definition. I think here it's really we're focusing on case taking.
Okay.
And on the need to individualize. I would bring attention to an expression here. For settling the indication in each case of chronic disease, he is called on to cure. Note, today we would have to say he or she. The duty of a careful apprehension of its ascertainable symptoms and characteristics is as indispensable for the homeopathic physician as it was before that discovery, i.e. before the discovery of Sora, or any other pronunciation. I'm going to be self-conscious about that now.
Don't worry, just say it.
The point being is that, yes, we may have a broad symptom picture and some remedies to match, but in order to individualize, we need to look for the ascertainable symptoms and characteristics in this particular case of disease. Patient is sitting in front of us. We need to see what's ascertainable, to check with a patient. What symptoms can we winnow out from this disease that are clear and sure and characteristic and individualize the case of disease in front of us? But let's move on because Hahnemann explains more and more, and his explanations are much better than mine.
Okay. Shall I read?
Sure, go ahead, 83.
This is aphorism number 83. This individualizing examination of a case disease, for which I shall only give in this place general directions, of which the practitioner will bear in mind only what is applicable for each individual case, demands of the physician nothing but freedom from prejudice and sound senses, attention in observing and fidelity in tracing the picture of the disease. Now, are these capital letters only in my version, or are they everywhere?
I have italics. I have italics.
You have italics. Okay.
So let's
he's
think
emphasizing. What does it mean?
Nothing but freedom from prejudice and sound senses, attention in observing, and fidelity in tracing the picture of disease. Now, if we ask people, what do you think a practitioner needs in order to take a good case, we would hear a lot of other expressions. We probably hear intuition as one of them.
I don't think so.
I think that a lot of people would say you need intuition as a practitioner, or you need to be able to sense your patient. You need a lot more what I would call touchy-feely things. And Hahnemann is saying no. He's saying you need freedom from prejudice, sound senses, and he's talking about the usual five, attention in observing, and fidelity in tracing the picture of the disease. So here, actually, we have all the elements that we need to practice in ourselves in our day-to-day life in order to enhance our case-taking. When someone says something to us, relate to it with freedom from prejudice, which also includes not finishing other people's sentences for them, not assuming that we
sorry
know what people are going
that.
To say. I'm taking it to a way.
Sorry if I do that.
No, I didn't mean you. But I'm taking it deliberately to a personal level because I think that most homeopaths will agree that there are certain behaviors that we get used to as part of case taking, as part of working with patients, that become part of us.
Yes, like, so that becomes part of the way we do it, huh?
But for example, we learn that when the patient is sitting in front of us, there's only observation, there's no judgment. We're not there to judge in any way. We're there to observe, to understand, to see what has changed in the patient's makeup, to see where we can help, how we can help. We're not there to say to a person, you are wrong and you are a bad person and that's why you're sick. That's not homeopathy. Freedom from prejudice is very much homeopathy. And one of the things that I've heard said about homeopaths is that we are not judgmental, and that makes people feel comfortable.
Right.
Which is very valuable.
Right. People will open up and give the information that's needed if you're just there listening and being the witness, being the sounding board. As he says, freedom from prejudice. You know, I don't think any human being can be totally unprejudiced and unbiased because they are part of the interaction and they're part of the world. But to consciously, you know, don't react if somebody says something totally wild, mm-hmm. you know, to let them speak freely in whatever comes out from them.
I think sound senses is interesting because we're used to it. Those of us who hang around small children from time to time, we're used to telling them, notice what this smells like, notice what this looks like in colors, and notice what this tastes like. What did you hear? Did you hear the car? Did you hear the whatever? We're used to pointing out senses. We're used to pointing out different elements of touch. I think there has to be that element when a patient comes into the room. We have to think, what do we see? What do we smell? What texture does the... If we shake hands with a patient, which I find very useful, or I usually say to the patient, can I look at your nails? So then I hold the hand and look at the nails. So then I have two benefits. One is that I've seen the nails, and another is that I get a sense of what this skin feels like.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, there are some smells also that will accompany a patient into the room, which if we know we're looking out for them, will help us greatly in heading towards a remedy. And I won't go too deeply into that one.
Well, I can tell you that this is one of your greatest hints here to say, may I look at your nails? I think that's fabulous. And you can gather so much information that way. And mm-hmm. when you said people come in with their smells, I think so many people have come in and pulled out this great big huge chocolate bar, and they say, I'm hungry, can I eat? And they have chocolate with them all the time, and that's what it smells like. But, you're asking us to think like a child, to see the world new like a child, so that they come in fresh into our vision as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you view them as a child, then you ask for some of the chocolate.
If you're hot, if you like chocolate. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so attention and observing. That's really something that when you... I remember being at a seminar, I think it was Paul Hershku gave the seminar, or Hershku, I don't know how to pronounce that one either. And he said, look at the person next to you and write down what you see. And then he said, okay, write another half page of what you see. And then he said, exchange a few words with the person next to you. And now write down everything you observe, nothing you assume, everything you observe about the person you just spoke to. And he had us writing pages and pages. And I found it an interesting exercise with students to take them to a mall and just have them watch people, literally watch people and write down what they see about them, what they notice, with no clues and no assumptions. And then you have the fidelity in tracing the picture of the disease, which is both in the writing and in developing a timeline, in following what happened then and what happened next and what happened afterwards. So
yes, it's interesting he uses the word fidelity, you know, mm-hmm. as being faithful to the practice,
mm-hmm.
faithful to the way that you're examining the case and examining the disease and examining the individual who comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
I have an additional bit of information. Not that you should, anybody should ever feel hesitant about pronouncing words, because we all have our own personal accent, whether you live on the East Coast of North Carolina or the West Coast, it's going to sound different. But Gary says that from the medical dictionary, the freedictionary.com online, the word P-S-O-R-I-C, miasm, is pronounced psoric, and it doesn't have a P in front of it. So,
okay, well, I will have to tell Gary that I'm very sorry.
You don't have to apologize to anybody, really? Actually. I think it adds some information to people. When I've pronounced plenty of words wrong, especially names, so I like to be corrected. That's how I learned to do it the right way. Are we continuing with this same aphorism now?
I think we can. We've got enough time. We can read aphorism 84. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. The patient details the history of his sufferings. Those about him tell what they have heard him complain of, how he has behaved, and what they have noticed in him. The physician sees, hears, and remarks, by his other senses, what there is of an altered or unusual character about him. He writes down accurately all that the patient and his friends have told him, in the very expressions used by them. Keeping silence himself, he allows them to say all they have to say, and refrains from interrupting them, unless they wander off to other matters. The physician advises them at the beginning of the examination to speak slowly, in order that he may take down in writing the important parts of what the speakers say. And the footnote, every interruption breaks the train of thought of the narrators, and all they would have said at first does not again occur to them in precisely the same manner after that.
That is so beautiful. It is gorgeous what he's written here in Aphorism 84.
It's
always
tell very
everybody,
elegant. Yeah.
Please speak slowly. I tell them often. And and it does. I mean, truthfully, you can interrupt someone's train of thought. And then again, I kind of give, and then I say, please speak slowly, because I'd like to get all this information. And I say, give them a subconscious, a subliminal intention. You know, you can always go back to where you were, and you will not lose your train of thought. Am I the only person who does that?
If we just take this apart, though, also there are certain elements. The patient details the history. So the patient, first of all, tells. The patient, first of all, tells. The thing is, though, very often if the patient is a child or sometimes a husband, the wife or mother may have told us something of the case. So those about him tell what they have heard him complain of. And I find that element is really important. Getting some kind
explain that again. I didn't catch that.
The idea that we're not just looking at what the person is complaining of, we're also looking at what the people around him say he's complaining of.
Okay.
Like in one case that I had, the patient complained of headaches. There was a psychologist who had referred the patient who said this patient had never once mentioned headaches, and that's not why she was referred. So it turns out that the sensation actually wasn't a headache. It was something else. The patient was expressing it as a headache, but it was something else. So all the headache remedies went out the window. Very often the patient will want to present a certain image, and that image might distort the way they tell what they're suffering from. Those around may give a more accurate picture. Now, also, the other thing here is that the physician sees and hears what there is of an altered or unusual character. We're talking about alteration from health. We're not talking about this person has an unusually good sense of humor. We're not talking about character traits that, while being interesting and not pathological, not prescribing points, what's altered or unusual, as in not usual to this person. If the person, when well, is morose, and when sick, is very patient and happy, well, that's altered and unusual.
Mm-hmm.
He carries on developing this theme a bit later, but this is certainly how I understand what he's saying here, and he strengthens this later. And there's writing down accurately. Have you seen homeopaths who their case taking is like a few words with an arrow pointing upwards, and then three words with an arrow pointing to the left? And have you seen that kind of case taking? I have. As a patient, I've seen it. It made me feel somewhat neglected.
Actually, I would be very envious of that homeopath if he knows how to read his shorthand. If they do a great job and that's their notes and they know what it means, I think that's fabulous. I was taught to record verbatim the patient's very own words. So. Mm-hmm. I think that is important. And here in this aphorism, he does say also, I don't know that you pointed this out, but that there's a historical timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be sure that that's pointed out. Have you seen many people who have done that kind of a shorthand of minimal
writing?
I've
seen quite a lot of people who've done that.
Well, I envy them.
You know, Debbie, we're running down on time again. I see we only have 1 minute left.
All right.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Fantastic time with you, Vera. I'm just having the greatest time. Well, I feel like my umbrella on a side note is you say tomato and I say potato. Were you able to get that one?
I'm not quite sure.
I said you say tomato and I say tomato, but more to the point of the aphorism 82, I think it's being faithful to the case taking. And you might have something else.
I don't have anything right now. I'll try to put some things up on the blog. I'm a little behind on the blog, so I have to catch up.
Okay.
I think we're done, Debbie, right?
We're at the end, and tomorrow we'll pick up where we left off.
Yeah,
okay,
tomorrow we'll do 84 also again. Okay. Bye to all.
Take care.
Have a great Sunday.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.